Bills running away now.
You're listening to the best of the Bills.
Touchdown, the first play from scrimmage.
A weekly mix of WGR 550's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
You might be mocking me or you might be staunchly agreeing with me. I can't tell.
I'm mocking you.
And the Bulldog.
What is Fozzie Bear's role in this production?
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
If you want to talk Bills with us, maybe you're out at Fisher today, 803-0550. If you don't, fine, we'll be doing plenty of it. Bulldog is over here farming training camp news from around the league. Chase Brown?
That is what I'm doing, yes. Chase Brown. There's a little video I just saw of him running through the ladder. You know, the ladder.
Yeah, I love the ladder.
The ladder. There's some little cones there. Anyway, quote here from their O coordinator, Dan Pitcher. Chase Brown is going to be one of, one of the focal points of our offense. Did I say that the first time I read it to you off the air? One of the focal points of our offense because he deserves to be. This tweet contains the text that says here, Dan Hoard is the reporter sharing this. The team record for scrimmage yards in a season is 1773 by James Brooks.
Oh, I love James Brooks.
Could Chase Brown break it? He had 1350 last year.
No.
When I saw, the reason I said it to you, I mean, Chase Brown, whatever, fantasy, I read it as Chase Brown is going to be the focal point of our offense, and you know Jamar Chase and T. Higgins are on that team, and I thought, wow, but one of, okay, thanks, Coach.
Thanks, Coach, exactly.
Sure.
Thanks, Coach.
He's your number one running back, so you're going to use him probably.
I know. Who's
a lot.
What team's number one running back would not be described as one of the focal points of their offense?
He's going to have the ball probably 280 times this year between catching and running, so yeah.
I shouldn't have said I loved James Brooks. That was too strong.
But you liked him?
I liked him. Yeah, I liked him as a Charger, and then he went to the Bengals and beat the Bills in the playoffs, and didn't like him as much. But respected him. One of those guys. Here we are, running backs again. One of those running backs from the day, depending on your age, when the day was, that had a style, you know, always was described as, well, often the focal point of the offense. In that team's case, it would have been Brooks and Icky Woods in 88 with the Bengals. But yeah, he was small, quick.
I remember him being small and quick, but also because of the era he played in, having preposterously huge shoulder pads.
Oh, yeah?
I feel like he never looked like a big guy, but the pads just looked like they were. His shoulder pads, in my head, I know this isn't actually the case, but in my head, if you were to ask me to draw from my memories of James Brooks, the shoulder pads would be like halfway up his helmet in the picture that I would draw, because that's how I see it.
Who's on the Mount Rushmore of shoulder pads? Garth Snow.
Yeah, sure.
Every indoor lacrosse goalie.
Chest protector, shoulder pad combo, but yeah, sure. All right.
It's amazing that like at a Bandits game, the pad, the shoulder pads the goalies wear have not like broken through the roof of the arena yeah. and caused it to rain indoors. Every indoor lacrosse goalie, Garth Snow, James Brooks apparently.
Feel like there's a couple of the Steelers, like the James Harrison might be too early. Lavon Kirkland.
Okay.
Greg Lloyd, like those Steelers. But again, everybody in the league had much bigger rigs on than the guys have on now. But those Steelers guys, I just felt looked massive. Kirkland was a really big guy for an agile linebacker like he was. So he was a very big, heavy man for someone who moved the way he did. But big shoulder pads.
Bills. Conlon?
Conlon comes to mind. Yep.
I was thinking of Joe DeLaMalier for a second, but it's not shoulder pads. It's that collar that he wore.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that a horse collar? What is that? Is that a Grogan?
Yeah, I think it's a Grogan.
Is it?
Yeah.
That collar around his neck?
I think it is, yeah.
A little added protection can't hurt.
Sure. A Bills player does not immediately spring to mind as like just ridiculously comically huge shoulder pads.
Ray Bentley?
Maybe. Yeah.
There's
a highlight that makes the rounds It's a Bills Steelers highlight from the 90s, and I think the running back is maybe Barry Foster.
Okay.
And there's a block downfield. Somebody just obliterates. I think it's Shane. It might be Shane Conlon. I can't remember who it is. But everybody on the field in that video, the shoulder it just looks like a video of shoulder pads. Like everybody's got these tiny little pinheads and these giant shoulder pads. Even Foster, like the running back, has got these big. Thank you for those watching on the stream. I just did this while I was describing Barry Foster.
Arms?
I moved my arms like I was running awkwardly, not very.
Need a ball? Do we have a ball?
Here, I got my drink. No.
But Kyle pissed today.
Such a different look back then.
Kelso had the helmet.
Right.
We need a. Do we need. Need is too much. Do we want a Rushmore for each piece of equipment in sports? Who do you think of? Hockey helmets. Mike Lezikowski, Butch Goring,
Foligno.
Mike Foligno.
Northland helmet. Yeah.
Have you ever met Mike Foligno? Probably.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Mike Foligno used to come get pizzas from me at Santora's at Main and Union. It was one of my favorite phone calls ever. Like, it's busy. Lines are on hold, right? So, thanks for calling Santora's Main and Union. Can you hold, please? Hold. And eventually someone will get around to, everybody would take turns. Who's available? I'm freed up. I'll go get somebody get on the phone. And I picked up a line. I answered the phones a lot there. I was a manager. And I answered the phone. He said, thanks for holding. This is Santora's. What can I do for you? Who am I talking to? The voice says. And I say, this is Chris Parker. He said, Chris, this is Mike Foligno, the Buffalo Sabres. And then he just gave me this huge order. And I'm like, okay, Mike, we'll see you in a little while.
So were you supposed to give him the pizza for free?
I didn't.
Is that why he did that?
I don't know. I don't know.
Half price, what would you do?
I was not instructed to ever do that. Gilbert Perreault used to come in for spaghetti pretty regularly on the way home from games.
You always charge them full price?
Yeah, there was never any.
It's not like those guys were super rich.
Yeah, they didn't. There was never an issue. There was never like a hesitate, like, oh, this guy's charging me.
As
far as I know, yeah.
Did they ever come back?
But no, they came. Yeah, well, Foligno came a few times, and Perreault would come in those Sunday night home games, those 7 o'clock Sunday night home games. That was his night. He didn't do it every time there was a game, but
after a game,
half a dozen times, 10 o'clock at night. Here's Gilbert Perreault stopping in for some spaghetti and a salad to take home.
Nice.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
I can't believe he didn't give him a break.
And he would always find like a shadowy spot to stand so that, other people coming in and out weren't going to go like, oh, there's Gilbert Perreault. Mm-hmm. They would just kind of hang out in a trench coat, like in the shadows. And like,
I can see it.
Mr. Perreault, your food's ready. Thank you very much.
I can see it.
On his way.
I can see it.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I never asked the boss if I should be giving the Sabres people deals, but I don't remember ever doing that.
Is James Cook right now walking around Pittsburgh with a sign around his neck that says, I'm playing for my rookie deal? I'm still on my rookie deal.
Right.
Trying to see if he can get a loaf of bread.
Give me a break on some wings, please.
I bet those guys expect, I don't mean this in a bad way, I bet those guys expect a break. They don't have to, accept it.
Right.
They don't really, they shouldn't need to.
No, I would think if they go to a, whatever, they go, they wherever, everybody knows the popular wing joints. They go to that place, and like Josh Allen is notorious. People, I think, know his favorite wings. I don't want to say them because I'm not sure what they are. But
I want to say I have no idea.
Okay. I have a guess, but I don't want to guess. But I know the joint, and they comp him. I think he leaves the waitress $100. You know what I mean? Like you'd want to do something because if they're going to comp you the food, like let me take care of who's taking care of me, kind of thing. I'm just guessing. I mean, I don't mean to put pressure on him. Like, he should be tipping people $100 everywhere he goes. But, you know, you bring three teammates out for wings, and if they do comp you, then I think you go above and beyond with the servers.
Makes sense. Well, Cook, if you didn't know, is in. And that might be that. So much for all this speculation that we have absolutely dived headfirst into this whole time. I have. I'm not embarrassed by it. I feel like that's what you should do. When a running back is tweeting about getting a huge raise on this team, I mean, should you ignore that, or should you think that he might be serious? Maybe he wasn't serious. Because how could you be serious and just do nothing? Don't you kind of want to think that through first? I mean, if you don't really think you have, you might want to talk to your agent first, not just your brother. You might want to talk to somebody and be like, you know, they kind of have you
right
here. He is getting a big jump this year in his pay from last year, just by the virtue of the structure of
the contract.
Yes, right. But I don't know like how much money he's gotten already or if that's a thing. But wouldn't you want to, seems like obviously you would want to maybe consider the consequences and what are the possible outcomes here. And if he wasn't willing to go to day two of training camp without any sort of a stand, what was the point? Sal said that too today with us. What was the point?
His career has gone 1 million, 1.3 million, 1.5 million, and now 5 million this year. So he's made 4.6 million.
He'll make more this year than he's made combined in his career.
Right.
Yeah. So that's good.
That is a healthy jump. But still, if you're, you know, looking for security, it's not. I mean, you should. Should be able to reasonably secure with that. I know, right? But still, in that world,
I'd like, you know, a try at it.
You're looking for, right? Can I make
it? Let me try it.
I'm 60. Can I make it from here to the finish line on $4.6 million? I'm going to say yeah.
Let me try.
I think I can make it. I'm hopeful.
Make it a Brewster's Million situation, and if I lose, I lose it all. Right. Let me see if I can make it 4 years on $5 million. If I lose, if I can't, I lose. No, Brewster's Millions, 2 days in a row for classic 80s movies, Princess Bride and now Brewster's Millions. That guy had to spend a fortune, I think in 30 days, to get
a bigger fortune.
The bigger fortune, right. But if he had to spend it all, and he couldn't explain why he was doing it, and he had a female financial advisor helping him, and she was always just incredulous. Why are you buying this antique vase? I can't tell you, but there's a method to my madness.
I have a plan.
So anyway, what was Cook's point? Was it just to be funny? Anybody know? What was this about?
Hope, maybe if I say I want this, they'll just give it to me. I don't know.
Maybe the Bills are on Twitter and would notice me that way,
right?
Not just because I've just scored literally 18 touchdowns in a season for them. I'd have to go through Twitter to get their attention. I don't know what kind of advice this guy gets. I think today seems, Sal, again using Sal, is today the end of it? I mean, it's weird if it isn't.
I think it's the end of it. I don't even want to say it because I'm.
He could get a new deal.
He also could think showing up should precipitate him getting a new deal. And if he doesn't, then he storms out on day three of camp or something. But I feel like a jackass even suggesting that. He's done everything that by the letter that he was supposed to do throughout this, except for the tweeting, really. And that there's nothing, you know, there's no rule against that. He just did it. It was an odd tack to take and not do anything substantive to follow it up, which is really your point here. So I want to ease back on the conjecture about what could still happen if it's negative toward him, because he's here. Like, it's a nothing burger at this point. And yeah, the only thing to me that would make it a story again, that's likely, and I don't even think it's that likely, is that there suddenly is a deal. Like that, like I said earlier, that they've got, you know, they had a number. Cook didn't like it. Bean didn't like that he didn't like it and was stern about it when he was asked about it right away back in the winter at the combine or whenever it was Bean first talked, owners meetings. Like, we moved on to other things, and that was the last of it. And so maybe whatever that number was, now that Cook has shown up, he came to minicamp, he's here now, he's doing all the work, maybe the Bills have had a little in reserve left to, like, hey, you know, here's a little extra from our last offer. Here's some more guaranteed money or whatever that would could move the thing across the goal line. And maybe at this point Cook goes, well, you know, if I can get four times as much guaranteed that I'm due this year, right? $20 million guaranteed, say, on a three-year deal. Yeah, maybe that's worth doing. And the Bills maybe would be happy with that. I would assume they would if they were willing to offer it. You know, they would be happy if he would accept it. So maybe that's out there, but I don't know. I feel like the Bills should be basically sitting at the table with their arms folded, or not even at the table anymore. Just like, we're done. He's here. He's going to play out his rookie deal. And, you know, we'll see what happens from there. We'll re-engage at some point. But I'd say the most likely scenario now is he just plays it out and hits free agency next year.
I can't resist. It's not going to work perfectly, but another dated reference. I shouldn't even. I always refer to this one episode of Seinfeld where it's the pilot and he has the girlfriend, the woman playing Elaine, and he's just like so indifferent toward her. And, you know, the Bills are Seinfeld. He's got, you know, a hot towel on his back of his neck or something. His feet are up. He's reading the paper. It's the 80s or the 90s, right? He's reading the paper, and she comes over and says something. He's like, okay. And the Bills are Seinfeld in that, and Cook's like, all right, but wait. Whatever.
We're good here.
Let us know. Whatever. Nothing to see. Is he on the team next year?
I would bet heavily no.
Heavily no. This is it. There aren't a lot of these. Right? The Bills have taken care of their young stars so thoroughly that usually don't have maybe there's a better example. Najee Harris in Pittsburgh, right? We thought they were lousy, but they were in the playoffs again.
He had 1,000 yards
every year. He had 1,000 yards every year of his career. They had already declined his fifth-year option, so there wasn't as much speculation about whether he would be back. But, you know, there's a guy that was serviceable to his team and, you know, somewhat of a star, and then their season ended, and he was just gone. You know, there are players that get cut unexpectedly sometimes, you know, cap savings, different things. Like Von Miller not being back isn't surprising.
No.
Last season ended, and, you know, right away we're like, he's probably gone. And he is. What is it going to sound like this year with Cook if there isn't a contract? Are we going to just never talk about it? Are we going to want to? Not even like, should they do something? Anything like along those stricter lines, but just going to watch it end? Like it's probably going to end?
I think probably, yeah.
And then Ray Davis or some rookie is a free agent as their running back in 26?
Ray Davis, Ty Johnson, and a rookie or a mid-free agent that doesn't cost as much as Cook was going to cost, and you just keep going.
Yeah. It all sounds right to me. It's defensible.
Yeah.
It's always been defensible.
Yeah. Cook is, I mean, you know, over here I'm thinking, well, you know, they did do this with Devin Singletary, but Singletary was never the level of player that Cook was. I mean, snap count-wise, it might be a pretty close match, you know, usage-wise, but production-wise, you know, everything, like Cook has been, you know, just a better running back for the Bills than Singletary was. But they did just let that play itself out, and he left, and he's been to Houston, and then the Giants, and is he still there in the Giants?
He is.
He's with the Giants.
He is so with the Giants.
Oh, here we go.
On ADP chasing yesterday, we examined closely several team photos, workout photos, because we all want to know, who's in with the quarterback. And no one is closer to Russell Wilson in that picture than Devin Singletary. Mm-hmm. He's like, they're all over each other in this picture.
All right.
Malik Nabers is way over there. Mm. Jameis Winston is way over there. Jackson Dart is over here. I don't remember everybody. Theo Johnson's kind of close. There's Devin Singletary right in there. I mean, I think he's third there. Scadaboo and Tyrone Tracy. He might be second because Tracy fumbled a lot. But the rookie is probably in line to be important with the Giants. And Russell Wilson will be the starter. And he's never looked happier than he looked in that picture.
Oh, sure.
He's ready.
Yeah.
Let's ride. 803-0550. Bills camp is open. Mike Schopen and the Bulldog. Lines are open here on WG.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio.
On WGR.
Bills camp day two. Out at St. John Fisher University. I'm so old, it was college when I went mm-hmm. there. You went to Buffalo State College, I believe it was called when you were a yep. student. Now it's everybody's university. Now
Canisius
everybody's so fancy.
University, that sounds great.
Everybody's so fancy. Sal with us now on what was probably a pretty hot second practice of camp, although these morning practices help a little bit. I don't know, Sal, were you thinking that? Did it feel like you were getting a break this morning?
I think as bad as it could get and as bad as it got during the afternoon, for sure. I mean, people have said to me, I've received a lot of texts today. Hey, how you doing? You staying hydrated? Things like that.
Right.
And I'm like, look, it could be a lot worse. We could be out here in the afternoon, but it's in morning practice. And obviously that helps, right? So, yeah, it could have been a lot worse. I think this should be like the hottest day out here. But camp gets like this sometimes. And they've had two shorter practices so far. And I don't know if that's by design initially, or if the heat plays into it, maybe a little bit of both. But it went today to like maybe 11:35. Same thing yesterday, and you know they could go a little longer, but they haven't.
So you wrote at our website WGR550.com about how the Bills spent some time today getting the ball down the field, 15 to 20 yard pass plays. You know, of course, he's not going to get hit, right? You take as much mm-hmm. time as you need. But did you feel that this was like today's point of emphasis?
I did. And I wonder if it was something going in that they wanted to concentrate on that, or if it was that's just kind of the way the plays developed. Knowing how practices work this time of year, my guess is they really wanted to work on this specific part of the game. And, hey, we're going to look to this area of the field, and we're going to try and hit some balls there. And I thought that the offense was successful in doing that. And of course, that comes with the other side of the ball, doesn't make the plays. You know, I mean, you always want some give and take. But I thought the offense had a better day today than they did yesterday, and especially in the intermediate passing game, which I do think they intentionally concentrated on.
Yeah, some of what I've read, including from you, indicated that maybe Keon Coleman had a much better day than you. I don't think he caught a ball yesterday. Not that I'm one that's keeping stats on this or anything, but I found out he didn't catch a pass yesterday when I heard him being complimented today. But a good day for him, you'd say?
I would say so, yeah. I put a video up today of the pre-practice period, the warm-up period, you know, the quarterbacks throwing routes to receivers, because obviously once they go to offense against defense, we can't do that. We can't shoot any video. And the reason why I put it up was because it relates to what happened during there, which is there was a play, there was a throw. Keon Coleman makes an in-cut from Josh, probably about 10 yards down the field. He catches the ball, and I mean, immediately he puts his foot in the ground and turns upfield. And I got to tell you, it sounds simple. It really does. But that's one of those little coaching points you learn when you're very young. And when you tell receivers, you catch that ball, you don't stay on your path for two or three steps, right? You know what I mean? You could catch it and just keep riding and then get upfield. It's you catch it and you go, like a running back trying to get to the edge. And he did that really well. And then guess what happened during 11-on-11? Same kind of thing. Going the other way, he catches it right around, you know, maybe I'd say 25 yards downfield on this one. It's a pretty deep throw from Josh Allen, and he found himself in a really good spot, caught the ball, and he just turns up the field, then he gets to the sideline, and, you know, that was a notable play for me. I think that he had a good day. I think Curtis Samuel was the guy today for me that I really latched onto. I thought he had a really strong day today. He worked that intermediate range really well. They threw it to him in all levels of the field, but especially that intermediate range, I thought he made a couple of really nice plays.
Well, I really wonder about him. I mean, I know going back to a year ago at this time before he suffered the toe injury during that was joint practices in Pittsburgh, if I remember correctly, it was like, wow, how many different things are they going to do with him? You know, just the variety of ways that you could utilize a player with his skill set. And you know, you go through the year, and it's such kind of a downer of a year, mostly until really the very end for him. I think maybe we should be thinking about starting that conversation over again, right? Like all the different things they may want to do with Curtis Samuel. If he's healthy, maybe he's really an interesting factor in this offense.
Yeah, listen, I mean, you guys, we've talked long enough where you know that's kind of how I felt always about Curtis Samuel going into this year. I think last year was kind of a bit of a wash for what they wanted to do. It's almost like, as you said, you start over. I think the same plan is in place for Curtis Samuel. They want him to be a matchup guy. They want him to be a guy that they can put all over the field in different spots, including in the backfield. He's played running back, right? I think we saw a little glimpse of that in training camp last year, but you could, because he's played running back, you could put him in the slot. You could put him outside. He can win at different levels because he does actually have really good speed. Unfortunately, we just didn't see all that come together last year. And I think because of time on task with the injury, a lot of that, you know, you have a lot on your plate when you're supposed to do that. And then just the timing of everything gets messed up. I think you just kind of start over from that regard, to be quite honest with you. And you put him back in that position and say, this is why we brought him here. And we still think he can be that guy.
Is there anything to say about Elijah Moore yet?
No. He is just, he's got really good feet. I notice him right off the line of scrimmage. He's got really good feet. I haven't noticed him in the 11-on-11 or 7-on-7 portion as much as I do when I'm watching like the one-on-one. Like when you're standing next to him and you watch the physical skill set of him just kind of releasing against air, running a route, like he looks like a really good athlete who has suddenness to him. You could tell that. I haven't seen much happen with him in the 7-on-7 or 11-on-11. I mean, one point to make here about Keon, to circle back, and I think this kind of goes for everybody since we're talking about receivers, though. I really like the point that Joe Brady made today. Now, Joe didn't say it like this, but he basically is what he said, which is, don't judge Keon Coleman until you get the pads on. This isn't his game. Keon Coleman's game isn't shorts and a t-shirt, right? Keon Coleman's game is physicality. When you try to put hands on him and how he can win separating from you as you're running down the field. Right now, you can't do that. He could put hands on him. You're not fighting. You're not hand fighting right there, right? He can't use his strengths in this environment right now. And I really like that point. To me, it's the same reason I say I don't really watch O-line and D-line right now, because I'm not really gaining anything. What am I doing? Like, they're just going against each other and putting their hands on each other's chests and moving a little bit. I think that goes here, too. I want to see that with Elijah Moore, not because of the physicality in the same regard as I want to see with Keon Coleman. I want to see what happens when they're pressing, you know, Elijah Moore at the line of scrimmage, and he has the ability with his feet to kind of make a difference here because they can't necessarily get him.
I did see his name come up today in my feed while practice was going on, but it was more to be a compliment, I think, to Matt Milano, who chased him down pretty capably on an end-around try, if I read that correctly.
Matt Milano is just such a good athlete. He really is. I mean, he made a couple plays today that it's almost to the point where, like, I guess I did note one of them. I did write about it. I tweeted about it. I wrote about it. But he makes these plays. They're so routine for him, it seems like. And I know that he hasn't been on the field. But he just, that's what he does. He diagnoses. He gets to a spot. He is so good at getting to a spot on the field before anybody else because he's so good at understanding how to do that. It's seeing it and diagnosing it. But it's also the angle you take and the path you take. I mean, I don't know this. I'll have to ask Matt. I bet you Matt was a running back in his life. You know what I mean? Like he has the vision to understand how to get to a spot so well. It's great.
So there's no equivalent here. Like cornerbacks, they say, are cornerbacks because they can't catch. I don't know if Milano had fumbling issues or something as a running back. if he did play the position. Would that or something else qualify as the best of camp today? It's brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Get a Northtown Engine Shield engine protection warranty on new and used vehicles. And we'll find out later why Bulldog reacted like that.
Well, I'll tell you right now why, because I'll be honest. Sal, go ahead. Tell us what you think it is, but I think I know what you're going to tell me. Tell us.
It's not any of that stuff.
Right.
Right, Bulldog?
Yep.
It's James Cook's play today.
Yep.
James Cook had a legit, I think, I say it like this because, as I tweeted, you can never know when a play will actually be stopped in this environment, right? Because they blow the whistle as guys get close to you. So even though guys always are taught to continue to run for a touchdown, and it's so funny, the fans are like, yeah, there he goes. I'm like, yeah, he would have been stopped for a two-yard gain, actually, but they're not tackling him, right. So he just runs out. That wasn't the case for this little like swing pass caught in the flat by James Cook. Like, I think he legitimately had a 70-yard touchdown on this play, to be quite honest with you. He caught the ball in the flat. Reggie Gilliam was in front of him, makes a block. I don't remember who was out there. It was a corner. And he made one cut and then got to the sidelines, and bam, he was off to the races. And then the only other guy left deep was DeMar, and Tyrell Shavers got in his way. And again, can't block, but he got in his way enough where I think James Cook would have made this a legit 70-yard touchdown. So much so that I'm confident in saying that Deion Dawkins brought that play up when he talked with us after practice today and said, I think he would have had a 70-yard touchdown. And I'm like, right. Yep, I think he would have too.
What about Cook and his comments today? We've talked about this all the time. And when last we spoke before camp started, you mentioned how back at minicamp, you weren't entirely clear on what he was going for or what his motives exactly were, or what his plan was. Maybe that's the better way to put it. Today, he was asked, among other things, about whether he considered a hold-in or not being here. And he said, to one of, or both of those things, he said, I'd never really thought about it. Well, that's interesting. It furthers my state of confusion about this. Like, what actually was the strategy here with Cook?
Well, I think to James' credit, when we say this, right, to talk about this, which I agree, everything you just said, Mike, there was never that threat. Like, nobody put that threat out there. That was always a speculation by all of us, right. By people in the media. Like, we never heard James Cook say he wouldn't come and show up, except for the one maybe answer he gave at minicamp, like, well, we'll see when I get there. But, like, it was never anything that seemed. The only thing we ever heard from James Cook and his side was this number, $15 million, right? That's what we keep seeing and hearing and people putting out there. So when he does that, you know, we get to, okay, well, is he gonna hold in? That never happened. I think I got a little more clarity today just from listening to him. And I think the clarity is simply James Cook feels he's one of the best, if not the best running back in the league, and he wants to be paid as such. And whether that's from the Buffalo Bills or someone else, that's what his goal is. His goal is to get that contract. He wants to get paid. He wants to be a good teammate while he's here. He loves his team. There's nothing that means that he doesn't, none of that, but he feels that he should be compensated what he's worth, and he feels he's worth top running back money.
It was interesting to hear him talk about his desire to get involved on third downs more than he has been, which I guess almost any involvement on third downs would be more than he has been, because he just that has not been his role. And said, like, somewhat authoritatively, I think he said, like, and I'm going to do that, right? I want pass blocking and all that stuff. And I thought, did Joe Brady talk this morning? Did he say anything about, was he asked about James Cook's role on third downs? Because I'm curious if the team shares what Cook's vision is, because his motivation to show he can do that part of the job, it would be obvious, right? I mean, that's, I hope he knows, maybe the biggest thing standing in his way of getting a big top-of-the-market contract for a running back is that he played less than 50% of the snaps. And a way to up that to 60 or 70% is to be more trusted on third downs.
Yeah, I know exactly how emphatic you're talking about, because he said it to me. He looked right at me. I asked him about what that means, right. When he says wanting to play on third down. I said, what does that mean, like, for you? Does that mean – I said, we know you – what I said was, hey, we know you can catch the ball out of the backfield. So does that mean being a better pass blocker and showing that you can handle those duties? And he said, yeah, everything. You know, even being better, you know, catching the ball. But he said, I want to be on third down, and I'm going to. And I took it more as not he's been told he's going to – I took it more as a confidence of, oh, yeah, I got this.
Like, I'm going to show them I can do it. Right.
Yep, yeah, exactly, yeah. Right. That's the way I took it. I agree. I think by his answer, Bulldog, he kind of knows, like, this is a barrier to him right now. Mm-hmm. This is something that he has to show. Now, maybe, I don't know this, speculation, maybe James Cook feels that he should be on third down more. Maybe he feels that the Bills are holding him back from being on third down, and he's done what he can do. I don't know, right? That's really interesting. Does he feel that if he was with another team, another coaching staff would trust him more on third down and give him a bigger role on third down? Maybe that's where some of this comes from as far as making the money, where he feels, no, it's not me, like, not being on third down, which is causing this. It's you guys telling me I can't be on third down, but I know I can do that.
One thing, if this isn't too small a sample size, I want to think that it isn't. I mean, he was kind of famous for his drops 2 years ago. He had six officially. Yep. 11% of his targets were drops. And that season, this is 2023, 44 catches. And the total yards, like air yards, on those plays, 47. So it was a little bit down the field. Contrast that, might not sound like much. Contrast that to last year, 32 catches, a notch lower. The total yards in the air before being caught, -2. So like everything
was at the line
that was thrown to him was out in the flat, right, behind the line of scrimmage. And I think for him to get where he wants, the way you're talking, the way he was talking, is he's got to get to a point where they're going to throw him, you know, like wheel routes or, you know, curls or something where he's like for first downs, you know, at the sticks. Mm-hmm. Because none of that went away. I mean, there was a little bit of that before. You can think New England is one. You can think of a couple of drops that were pretty, you know, egregious. But last year, they kind of took that out of their offense. They took that away from him.
Yeah, you're right. I think I go back to thinking about 2 years ago, not this past year, but a couple owners meetings ago, Sean McDermott talking about that like type of philosophy on offense, which is I really kind of took note when he's like, you know, you don't have to throw the ball downfield to, you know, get the ball downfield. You can throw it short and have a guy run. He said that at the owners meetings 2 years ago. Well, lo and behold, that's exactly what you're talking about, Mike, which is I have a running back here. I don't have to hand it to him. I'll just throw it to him as a running back and then let him do what he does. And James Cook's really good at that. I don't know if the drops from 2 years ago played into that. You know, last year, how they did this and how they worked it. They also have Ty Johnson, who's pretty good out of the backfield, mm-hmm. who can run some of those routes. They've run some of those wheel routes to him. So we'll see what the plan is. I mean, you know, going into this year, if it changes at all. But I expect a lot of that same stuff. I expect a lot of the touchdown he had today was that. It wasn't down the field. It was basically behind the line of scrimmage or right at the line of scrimmage from my angle. I was in the end zone. It was coming at me. And he caught it, and he just made a move and went down the field.
Anything to report on the cornerback two battle? I know it's only, you know, day two of training camp, but was there, you know, anything at all between White and Hairston notable today?
The only thing I'll tell you is that early on there was an 11-on-11, and Josh threw the ball deep down the sideline to Keon Coleman, and Max Hairston was with him stride for stride. So that was a good play by him. Again, let's see what happens when these guys get pads on. You're talking about a size difference there. Is there anything that happens differently, you know, through the course of that route? But that was nice coverage by Max Hairston. And then I did note that almost every time, Tre'Davious White comes off the field and Max Hairston comes on for him, they make eye contact, they pass each other, and they either exchange words or give a hello five or a fist bump or something like that. I just think those things are, you know, notable, right? You got a guy here who's a veteran. You know, the other guy's coming to take your spot, essentially. You know, Trey's kind of the penciled-in starter, I guess you'd say. And I think just shows Tre'Davious White's willingness to be a good teammate and say, look, I mean, this kid, I'm trying to help him. I'm not trying to hurt him.
Right. How about injuries today? There was Dorian Williams and A.J. Epenesa, I heard, left early. I didn't see any details on Epenesa, but you saw Williams after practice yourself, right?
I did. I didn't see any. I haven't not seen or heard anything about A.J. Epenesa's injury. In fact, I did not see either of them get hurt in any way. They both went to the trainer's tent area. But after practice, I did see Dorian Williams come out of the locker room as we were standing ready for press conferences. He walked up the stairs that lead to the dorm and lunch area, and he was on his own. He didn't have a trainer with him, a coach with him. He walked on his own, but he also had his lower right leg wrapped with like a sleeve on it, you know, a compression sleeve, I'd say. And then he had a pretty noticeable limp, I would say, but he did walk on his own, which is good. Dawson Knox was on the field today, not in a playing capacity, but working with a trainer off to the side. So obviously that's very good news for Dawson Knox to hopefully return, you know, sooner rather than later.
Recognizing that you said what you said about not watching the lines because there's no pads and there's not a lot to be gained there, but seeing as how Epenesa has come up, I'm wondering if it's crazy to think that maybe a good camp, a good preseason, just a good summer overall from Javon Solomon could put Epenesa in peril at all.
Agreed, and I think the team really likes Javon Solomon. I liked what I saw from Javon Solomon. Not that I don't like A.J. Epenesa, but this is a second-year player who I thought really showed some flashes when he played last year. I don't know if I've said to you guys, but if you go and look, I think Javon Solomon is the exact same size as Jerry Hughes.
Mm-hmm. Right?
He's like, it's you know, he's a undersized pass rusher, but you're talking about you know, him putting a really nice college career together, putting numbers up, getting to the passer doesn't have to translate, but a lot of times that position, it kind of can. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think if that's the case, you know, then maybe you're looking at an A.J. Epenesa, and I think they do save some money moving on from A.J. Not that I predict it necessarily here, but, you know, that might be a decision they have to make towards the end of training camp.
Sal, I believe I've read that you're going out tonight.
I mean, don't I go out every night?
Do you?
Here?
Maybe.
No, we had a nice night last night over at the Pittsford pub, just a few media colleagues getting together and having some dinner and unwinding a little bit. But tonight, a little bit different. We're Matt Bovey and I are going to be headed over to Bar Bill East over on Empire Boulevard out here in Rochester. We're going to do our It's Always Game Day in Buffalo podcast live. And then if you're not there live, you don't watch it, you can always watch the recorded version, which is fine, obviously. We've done it the last 2 years. We've had a great crowd. We set up another camera and mic. If people want to come up and ask us questions, we can do that as well. I believe we're going to have a little bit of WGR swag out there as well. And Fiddlehead IPA is helping making it possible. So they're going to be out there. So we're going to have a really nice time tonight out at Bar Bill East.
Very good. Any questions for us?
Any questions?
Yankees.
Oh, yeah. Yankees. No
four
Yankees.
More errors yesterday, Sal.
They lost. I wasn't going to mention it.
I know. You didn't ask me about the AFC East discussion. I was prepared for you to ask me about the AFC East discussion. So it's not necessarily a question. I guess I'll ask you, did you ever read when Dan Shaughnessy, on a yearly basis, would write an article about the tomato cans the Patriots are facing in the AFC East?
No, but I'd believe it.
Yep. So he used to do this, and I used to read it every year and get mad. Like, come on, like somebody can. Your discussion reminded me of that. Are we overconfident? Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, dude, the Patriots went through this for 20 years, and they just kept winning every single year. It did not matter.
Well, is that a fair comp? Maybe it is. I mean, nobody seems close right now.
Right.
To what the Bills are. So at least for now, it seems like that's maybe fair.
We know the Bills haven't had the, you know, overall success as them with the Lombardis and things like that. But, you know, I just remember Dan Shaughnessy writing articles about how the Patriots once again have a bunch of tomato cans. They're playing in the AFC East, and I'll see you in January. I mean, seriously, right? And it kind of remind me of that, to be honest with you.
I know he wrote books about how the Red Sox didn't win championships because of ghosts. But I didn't know about this other.
I read a few of those books.
Brand,
yes,
yeah, because of ghosts. Turns out they were able to win somehow. They were able to overcome the ghosts.
The ghosts let them win. Finally,
change their minds.
That's what happened. Yeah.
Thank you, Sal. Should be a fun night.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
All right, that's our Sal Capaccio on the Wester Hotline. Training camp coverage from St. John Fisher University is brought to you by Fiegel, Carr, and Joyce, your border attorneys, by Outlet Liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? By Connors and Ferris, your workers' comp attorneys, and driven by your Upstate Honda dealers for great deals on the entire Honda lineup. Visit your Upstate Honda dealer today.
I like hearing the name Jerry Hughes. Every time I hear that name, I get a little bit happy. I went to Twitter to see if he's... I don't think he's in camp anywhere, but I might be wrong. I haven't found out. But, you know, you search Jerry Hughes, and there his... He's used Twitter many times. He's been on there. There's his handle. And there's this other guy, Jerry Hughes. Jerry Hughes 54. A different Jerry Hughes.
Mm.
And his bio says, "Views my own."
Okay.
So I went to it. He's never tweeted. And he joined 12 years ago.
The man has no views.
Unless he's replied to other people, and I'm not seeing any replies. Mm. He's got an account. He follows no one. He has his own views, but you don't get to know them. They're so his own that he's not sharing. That's actually a great bit. I'm going to have Twitter. I'm going to announce that these are my own views, but guess what? I'm not telling you what they are. They're so my own, I'm keeping them to myself.
Interesting that he went with Jerry Hughes 54. Jerry Hughes' number was 55, at least with the Bills. I don't know what he wore in Houston, but I
52
think it was...
52
okay.
In Houston.
Okay.
But this is a different guy.
Right.
I'm telling you.
Yeah, gotcha. Right.
A picture of a different guy.
Right.
Views my own, but they remain unknown to us, whatever they actually are. Mystery guest time. Not next, but we'll announce who it is. I think Bulldog will be happy about it, but I'm going to put him to the test here, see if he can figure out who it is. Mike Schopen and the Bulldog, that's coming up after sports here on WGR.
Welcome back to our coverage of training camp here at St. John Fisher. Chris Brown, Matty Glab with you, and A thank you to the good people at Wegmans for providing us with our lunch here at St. John Fisher University. Today's offering was the Latin Chicken Bowl Party and a Chicken Harissa Bowl Party, all rolled into one. We had more food than we knew what to do with. We were pulling media members over here. Hey, you want some lunch?
Take our free food.
Because there was no way we were going to eat it all. But we were able to kind of build your own bowl kind of deal. And I went like spinach and white rice. And then the corn came in there, the chicken, black beans. I kind of went more towards the Latin Chicken Bowl Party than the harissa. I didn't do the feta or anything. What did you do?
I did spinach, some rice, some black beans, chicken. I did a lot of guacamole on there. And then I did another one of the sauces. And it was fantastic. In our office, we have become big fans of the Wegmans bowls.
Okay.
We get food provided during the season. So in the off season, it's okay. Did you bring your own lunch?
Yeah, you got a brown bag.
You want to go out for lunch? And oftentimes when we go out for lunch, it's, I'm feeling a Wegmans bowl.
Yeah.
And that station is awesome that they have set up at a lot of their locations. There's nothing better than just a, it's so easy to eat. Just put it all together, find your fixings that you like most, and you're good.
And it's like a good full after you eat it. It's not like a bloated full, like, oh, I ate too much. It's very filling, but in a good way. The bowl party kits take the same beloved flavors in the Wegmans hot bowls and scale them up for groups, offering a DIY setup that's perfect for office lunches, gatherings, or game day spreads, giving guests the flexibility to build their own bowl. Wegmans, the official tailgate headquarters of the Buffalo Bills. So, something to consider for your tailgates.
Yep.
Especially, you know, early in the season in the warmer weather, we got a lot of home games at the front end. So, this could be an option for you, the bowl party kits at Wegmans. You make your own hot bowl. You just set up the buffet line and let people go.
Good to go.
So, thanks to Wegmans for lunch today. We want to get to the phones at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. And leading us off today is James in Rochester. What do you got for us, James?
Hey, so before your break, man, James Cook, as far as I'm concerned, outside of Barkley, he's the best back in the game. Pay him. I know there's cap space. I know Bean's got cap problems. Somebody's going to pay that dude. And so pay him. Because, look, when Josh is on the field, you need a spy defensively. You're down to 10 dudes on the defense. When Cook is on the field, you're just about going to have to spy him because he's going to take you. He never, ever loses yards for the most part. He always turns the nothing into something, and he can break it 80 yards. You have to account for him just because he's behind Allen. Now the defense is down to 9 dudes. That's why Allen can toss the ball all over the field. You can pay a lesser running back, and the defense doesn't have to account for him. Pay Cook. Just pay him. He's the best back in the game.
Yeah. I think we've seen – thanks for the call, James. I think we've seen the difference over the last several years because when they went from Devin Singletary to James Cook, I think there is a marked improvement there. James is just a more dynamic athlete. I think a more versatile athlete in terms of rushing and receiving. I know there is some criticism of his game that, you know, standing in there and picking up the blitz – might not be a strength of his game, but I'll bet if you gave him time to do better at it, he would. That's just how he approaches the game. Best back in the league, I think he's up there. Cap is a problem right now. I think, as you heard Brandon Bean say yesterday, they would need to do a lot of work to fit him in. We hope it happens, but if he does not get his money here and he goes to the open market, he is going to make a lot of money, because now when you have 32 teams bidding on his services, that number goes up considerably.
And on the Bills end of this conversation, Brandon Bean spoke about we have to fit it in. There is a cap for a reason, and we abide by that. But then when you talk about what James Cook offers your offense and what he's done for this offense, especially last season, the 16 rushing touchdowns, that is not something that's easy to replace. And the answer may be if we're going in a different direction and we can't come together on an agreement, maybe the answer is we can't replace Cook right away because there is nobody available right now for us to do that, and we will do it over time. But do you want to give yourself time when you have this window of let's win now, let's chase the Super Bowl now, and when I think about chasing the Super Bowl right now, James Cook is a big picture of that in my mind.
Yeah, and all you have to do is, I mean, look at last year's playoffs. I mean, he's the best. He and Curtis, aside from Josh Allen, he and Curtis Samuel are the two best players on the offensive side of the ball in that game against the Chiefs.
Yeah.
I mean, Samuel, I think, finishes with five catches, and he has the go-ahead touchdown in the fourth quarter. James Cook was a menace. They did not have an answer for James, the Chiefs' defense. And that's a good defense. They did not have an answer for him. And even when they thought they had him, they didn't. That stretching touchdown at the goal line.
So good.
I mean, he made it look easy, and it was a high degree of difficulty play, completely parallel to the ground. He has to put his left arm down, keep his knees off the ground, and reach for the goal line with the football in his right hand. He was dynamic and a game changer in that game. To me, that's all the proof you need as to what level of playmaking impact he brings to your offense. And we heard Sean McDermott say it back in the spring, Maddie. He believes you have to have two to three elite playmakers on either side of the ball. We know Josh is one. I would put James in that category as two. Is there a third? Perhaps one emerges. We'll see. Defensive side of the ball, can Joey Bosa recapture that? And then is someone else going to be elite also? So that's the question. It's a bigger question on the defensive side of the ball. But if you take Cook out of the equation next year, you know, you're down to Josh and hopefully somebody that emerged, and you're down to two again.
There's a reason why GMs get paid the money that they get paid, because these are not easy decisions to make. We know Brandon Bean cares about the team right now, but he also cares about the team in the future. And there's a lot of thinking and conversations that you have to do with your own staff to figure out how much are we willing to push ourselves into the years in the future to make something work for the next few seasons.
Yeah.
And where is the balance? It's really tough because a lot of this is projecting. And you're projecting what you have. You're projecting what you have right now. You're hoping a Super Bowl comes this season, if not this season, in the next couple years. But there's a lot to think about. There's a lot of conversations that have to happen. And you have to be on the same page to make a decision like this.
Yeah, and it's not just about this year, as Brandon said yesterday. It's about next year and the year after and fitting all of that under. Let's go back to the phones and to Bill in Old Forge. What do you got for us, Bill?
Hey, man, Cook's a good player, but there's no way. 15 million years is ridiculous. I don't even know if I'd give him 9.5. Like, I hope Bean doesn't give him the money he's looking for. I hope he doesn't go in the upwards area of, like, 11, 12, 13 for a running back. The narrative is basically everybody knows they're replaceable. They get hurt easier because the load is on them most of the time. It's just you don't pay a running back any kind of money anymore. I think they'd be doing it just because, okay, we drafted him, so we have to pay this guy. I hope they don't do it. He's good and all, but I think we could replace him. Like you said, Chris, we had Singletary. He was okay when we were here. I mean, we had Freddie and Spiller back in the day. McCoy carried the load. McCoy was probably the last generation of backs that would carry the load the entire game, with the exception of few, the obvious ones, Henry and Barkley. And even those guys, I know they're making a lot of money too. I wouldn't even pay Henry and Barkley what they're getting. I'm not paying a running back the kind of money. I hope they don't go over 9.5, 10 tops for him if they keep him around.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, Bill, but I don't think that's coming close to getting it done. Josh Jacobs made 12 last year with the Packers. He's a 300 carry back. He did have more production. And seeing the increase in salaries across the league at other positions, you know that agents are trying to drive that up at the running back position as well, especially when Barkley gets a two-year extension that now makes him worth $20 million per.
Mm-hmm.
McCaffrey is still at 17, and he signed that 2 years ago now, right? He's at, or
19.
He's at 19 per, sorry. And he signed that 2 years ago. So James isn't asking for that. He's not asking for top of the market money. He's asking for top 7 to 8 money, maybe top 5 money. And the Bills probably feel they don't utilize him enough to justify that cost. And that's where I believe the rub is. Now, you can structure a contract any way you want to make it work and make it more palatable to the player, whether you put more money up front in the first 2 years,
right.
So it almost feels like he's getting $30 million in the first 2 years, or 26, or whatever the number the Bills land on. But I think it's going to take some doing, because there's a balancing act here. It's not just about James Cook and the Bills. It's about the salary cap, not only for 25, but 26 and 27, and where things go from there. Those are the other factors involved here.
And our caller mentioned 9.5. Well, if you're looking at 9.5, here are the players who are making around that. James Conner is making 9.5 per year. Joe Mixon is at 9.875. Then Aaron Jones is at 10. Then Josh Jacobs is at 12. You've got Alvin Kamara at 12.2. So,
and a lot of those guys signed those second contracts 2 and 3 years ago,
mm-hmm.
like Mixon and Connor. Mm-hmm. And those two players have still been productive. Mixon was injured last year, but Connor is still a 1,000-yard rusher. And he's a little long in the tooth now. So that's why Cook wants his money now, because he turns 26 in a couple of months. And he knows if he doesn't get paid now, he's never going to get a contract as big
right.
in the future. Got to take a break. One final segment to go here on day two of your training camp coverage at St. John Fisher. Chris Brown, Maddie Glab with you. We're back to close it up next here on One Bills Live.
Yo, VIP. Let's kick it.
Would you welcome a return there, or has that run its course?
Listen, I'm open to whatever I feel like is the best option. If Buffalo is that best option, obviously, you know, I will take it. That's definitely something that I will do.
Mm-hmm.
I know the system very well. I know the guys very well. And I feel like I can contribute big there like I have in the past. So, you know, Buffalo's definitely could be a team that I end up being on. You know, we'll see. I don't know.
That is Gabriel Davis on the Kay Adams Show yesterday. She asked him directly about the Bills. And he does say in there, Sal, like, you know, I could see it, and I think I could produce there. I know the guys. But both at the beginning of his answer and at the end there, he kind of sounds like somebody that doesn't really think that's on the radar at all.
No, and I don't think it's on the radar here from this standpoint, unless something were to happen maybe at the position.
Right.
And they felt like they had to go out, you know, and add to the group. But I agree. Honestly, if you played that clip for me, I know by what he said, I would say it's Gabe Davis. It did not sound like Gabe Davis to me. When
yeah.
you started playing that, I didn't realize that was Gabe Davis. And I've talked to Gabe a lot in my life.
Yeah. Is that just because it's been a couple of years, or does he have a voice that's kind of...
Maybe it's just a connection or whatever, but I'm like, who is this talking? And I realized who it was simply because of what they're talking about.
Right, right. And that is, yeah, that's Davis. How many of the Bills do you think you would know just by voice?
Ooh, not
I mean,
a lot.
90-man
right
roster is a tough time
right.
to ask that question.
Right.
But if we get it down to 53,
yeah,
you think you would know 30 of them by just their voice?
I'm going to go 50%.
50%?
50% on a 53-man roster.
Like Josh, you would know, obviously.
Yeah.
Would you know James Cook's voice just by James Cook's voice?
I would.
Okay.
A few receivers, I wouldn't.
How about Curtis Samuel?
Yeah, I think I would. I've talked to Curtis a few times.
Okay.
Like I think I would.
Him, I feel like I would have no idea.
Even I think Joey Bosa I'd get because he kind of just signed. And remember the press conference? He has this kind of distinct
he does.
Voice.
Yep. Tre'Davious White.
Oh, yeah.
Is an easy one.
Deion.
For sure. Yeah, Deion for sure. For sure.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to get to, by the way, speaking of, you know, Bills talking, I saw one player that looks like he's going to get featured on Hard Knocks.
Oh, really?
That was walking around yesterday. I'll mention that in a second, but Cliff in Kentucky is waiting on hold. What's up, Cliff?
Hey, guys. I got two questions for you. What rookie besides Madden Max has stood out so far? And I'm not going to ask you to tell me what's player, but usually at the end of this, Brandon Bean usually trades like a position that we have too much of and get some value like a fourth or a fifth round pick. If we were to say a position has too much and, you know, Brandon Bean trades, what position should we look for that we have a surplus of? Go Bills and go Cats.
Yeah. And listen, Was he in Kentucky? He said, go Cats.
He was in Kentucky, yes.
All right, well, I'll go right to your Kentucky guy. We'll go back to Deion Walker. I mean, he's just his body is so impressive. I can't say that anybody's looked like, oh, my God, you know, blowing off the charts plays they're making as a rookie. But I look at Deion Walker and say, oh, my God, like he's a man, right? And he's a football player. And he really stands out like that. So that's the answer to your question there. I'll even go further, and you said I'm not going to ask you what player, but I do wonder at the end of this process if you – now, because of the Michael Hoyt suspension, it makes it way tougher, but they have a bit of a surplus at defensive end. And then you think about a guy like A.J. Epenesa going into the last year of his contract, and I'm not going to sit here and predict that, you know, he necessarily gets traded. Javon Solomon, right? He's a guy – he's kind of like a Bam Johnson a few years ago, right?
Yeah,
not the same size player. He's a smaller size guy, but you had a guy on your team, special teams, pass rusher maybe, you know, not going to fit here, not going to have a spot. A.J. Epenesa, he's now in his second contract, going in the final year of his contract, though. I think defensive end is an area here, Joe, where they could have some decisions to make and maybe a surplus. And then I'll say also offensive line.
Yeah.
And I wonder, you have a guy in Ryan Vandermark specifically who had been a healthy scratch last year, who didn't win the swing tackle job. He did 2 years ago, but Tylon Grable took that from him last year.
Right.
And then when Tylon Grable got hurt, Vandermark was the guy. But it's Tylon Grable's job, and what I've seen out here, it still is. So is Ryan Vandermark a guy where, okay, yeah, we'll definitely keep him around, or you know what, he's got some value. I think those are the positions, but those are two guys I think about.
Yeah. And the end position, you're right, the Hoyt suspension makes it trickier because – you need guys to play early in the year. The Baltimore game, right away, like, that is a – whoever wins that game basically is a two-game lead for the one seed. Like, there are going to be important games early on. And without Hoyt, you know, if Hoyt was not suspended, I'd be sitting here right now saying, trading A.J. Epenesa frees up $6 million on your salary cap. Trading him, not cutting him. I don't think cutting him frees up anything. You trade him, $6 million – you don't have many spots anyway. If you like Javon Solomon, you know, get a pick, get an asset. But I don't have Michael Hoyt. And Epenesa is reliable and knows the defense and is a veteran at this point. So are they going to want to do that when they need – they might need veterans, feel like they need veterans early on to play. What's tricky about that is when Hoyt comes back, maybe you could get to, all right, now it's week 7, we're out of the bye, he's returning, and we have too many guys we like. Maybe then they decide to trade somebody in the middle of the season, but that would be assuming everyone's healthy. Yeah.
I think that's the key, though, Joe. By the time you get to week 7, there's some bumps and bruises.
Right.
Right? So you're like, okay, now we're getting Michael Hoyt back, and he fits right in. Because right now, you look at it, to me, here's the roster I'll show you.
Yep.
Rousseau, Bosa, Epenesa, and that's not Count Hoyt. You still have Javon Solomon, Landon Jackson. That's 5.
That's 5.
Right?
Yeah.
If you have to keep, if you keep Hoyt, you're not keeping 6 defensive ends in the roster. You
right.
know why I say that? Because you're also keeping 5 defensive tackles. Oliver, Daquan Jones, DeJuan Carter, TJ Sanders, and Deion Walker are making it. Larry Ogunjobi suspended.
Yeah.
So if you count Ogunjobi and Hoyt, you got 6 on each. You're not doing
12
that.
12 linemen.
Who's not making it? There's going to be a spot not open for somebody. Somebody doesn't have a chair at the end of it. What I wonder, too, is how do you divvy up the reps on defensive line, knowing that Hoyt and Ogunjobi are not going to be around for 6 weeks? Do you kind of use them up and get their reps going in preseason because they're not going to be with you? Because, Joe, those reps are valuable to those young guys who have to play early on as well.
Right.
I don't know how they're going to do this in the preseason.
They might. The reps is going to be tough. They might just really say, we're going to go 5-5, and we know it'll be 6-6 when Ogunjobi and Hoyt return, but we're going to just play it by year because there's a good chance that we have injuries. Just, it happens, right? And if one guy's injured at both, then that kind of makes it a little bit easier. And if not, then you cross that bridge when you get there.
You tease the Hard Knocks thing.
The Hard Knocks thing.
I want to know what player this is.
Following around, there was a camera crew that was following around one player yesterday, and I saw point out that he's going to be featured.
Ooh.
And I would assume in the first episode, like the stuff that they're filming in the last 2 days, I would assume that's episode number 1. August 5th is in my head. I think it's August 5th.
It's that Tuesday, I think, whatever that is, Tuesday.
Khalil Shakir.
Oh.
Yeah, Khalil Shakir is a feature early on. And I like that. I mean, this really, it's a big commercial for all the Bills and the important players and coaches that aren't Josh Allen. Like, everyone knows Josh Allen, and he'll be part of this too, of course. But it's a good opportunity to tell the story of a lot of guys and for the football world to get to know good players that maybe they're not that familiar with. And Shakir's very, you know, top of mind on that list. So not surprising to see him be one of the first guys featured. Who else would you assume is going? I feel like Ray Davis is inevitable because the Big Brothers Big Sisters program that he's very involved with, and he's got a personality.
I mean, I think Deion just immediately.
Deion, you know,
I mean,
for
Deion
sure.
was in Deion the tent
Walker,
yesterday.
Deion Dawkins.
Deion Dawkins. Deion was in the tent yesterday with his whole family.
Yeah.
He did the press conference with his three kids and his wife, and he said, "I love the camera. Shout out to Hard Knocks. I love being on. Like, guys, shy away from it. That's not me. I love this, and I think that stuff is going to show. But how much do they really follow him around?" Like you said with Khalil Shakir.
Yep.
Khalil's interesting because he's really good for what the Bills probably want out of this, right? Like from a standpoint of if you go to the Bills and say, hey, we need a guy who's good with the media. We're going to follow around. You know, he becomes a story. The Bills are thinking, well, we don't want a distraction. We don't want a guy who, you know, yet you're probably going to pick a guy at some point that's fighting for a job. But, you know, we kind of want the good PR out of it and a guy that's going to be able to handle this. And a guy that's not going to do anything wrong or say anything wrong, you know what? Khalil Shakir is a great guy for this.
Right.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't know how much it makes sense for fans watching at home versus other players.
Yep. I mean,
he's fine, but is there a real storyline with Khalil Shakir?
More than just his growth as a player and getting paid and what he means to the offense. No, right. There's nothing controversial about him. Really, the only player they could have done anything like that with, you mentioned like maybe you're like roster bubble player they could have done that with, or they could have done it with Cook. They could have done that.
Could have done it.
But you don't even know if Cook's going to give you any. I mean, he's here. He's here. He's practicing. I mean, the most maybe he'll give you is what he gave yesterday in the press conference.
I mean, I thought about, you know, we talk about roster bubble. I thought about even like a guy like Joe Andreessen, local kid.
That's a good one.
Right?
Like, that's a really good one.
Is that someone that they focus a little bit on?
Buffalo Joe.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of possibilities, but I'll be watching for that now. Khalil Shakir, I didn't know that.
Quickly before the break, Jay in Rochester. What's up, Jay?
Hey, morning. Heading out to training camp this morning. Just wanted to get a quick take on the defensive side as well, to piggyback off the last caller. You mentioned the depth on defensive line, and, you know, given the fact that our nickel base with the best nickel defense in the NFL, Teron Johnson, but I mean, with our depth in defensive line and three great starting linebackers, Matt Milano, Terrell Bernard, and Dorian Williams, you see any possibility of us incorporating a 3-4 or 4-3 defense this year to stop the run, or are we just going to go nickel? Thanks for the take.
Yeah, I don't see a 3-4 in real, like, specialty situations, you see a fourth linebacker on the field. I don't know what that would be. I do think they play a little more 4-3 this year. I do. And I think that because of what we talked about, you know, earlier, which is, you know, third downs. I think part of the third down issue might have been also just when teams might have a 3rd-and-2 or 3rd-and-1 and they can big boy you a little bit, right? It doesn't have to be 3rd-and-8 and 3rd-and-9 converting passes. But in those situations, maybe that's where. Look, it's always been the conundrum in Buffalo. It's always been the conundrum with the Bills since they've had Taron Johnson in his truest form over the last several years, which is, how do you justify taking Taron Johnson off the field, right, Joe? I mean, he's so good at what he does. But the reality is he's smaller. Teams take advantage of it. And the Bills have to have some sort of adjustment to counter that. And, yes, I do, to answer your question. Thanks for the call, Jay. I appreciate it, Jay. Enjoy your time up here and, you know, safe travels wherever you're coming from. But I do think that they have to have an answer to teams doing that. And that might come in. Dorian Williams might be that guy who plays the third linebacker when they go to that specific set. It's an interesting call for them. And look, I've asked Bobby Babich about this. We all have over the years. And he'll say it right away. He has to decide that.
Yep.
Like, this isn't something where we're thinking about it, but the team's like, no, it's totally like, we got it. They have to decide that every week. Do we take Taron off the field? Do we not? He's a great player, but he also is a little bit lighter and teams could take advantage of us. So I do think that's something they have to think about.
Last year when they played Baltimore, Dorian Williams played about half the snaps on defense. Last year, just looking this up real quick, 12 personnel against the Buffalo Bills and how much they saw it. And that can, you know, your schedule is going to impact that, of course, as well. They were 15th in the league in how much 12 personnel they saw. So, you know, middle of the pack, a little over 1,000 snaps on defense, and that's teams attacking you trying to get bigger when Taron Johnson's on the field.
Yep.
And now, all right, you want to run 12 personnel? We got to throw a linebacker. And he's a very athletic one, and not to say if Dorian Williams were to get better in coverage, like, to me, I still feel like there's a really high ceiling for him. Like, I don't know how far I want to go with that because he's already played 2 years and he was pretty good. He was a third-round pick. He wasn't a first-round pick. It's that speed and size combination that he's got, though, that just has me thinking, like, if he can just get a little more polished at coverage, the guy's got 4.48 speed.
Yeah.
He ran a receiver 40.
He gets there in a hurry.
Yeah.
He gets in a hurry. The issue has been diagnosing it as fast as possible.
Right.
And getting there under control.
Right.
There's a difference between getting there in a hurry and getting there under control.
Yep. 803-0550 is the phone number. Good question, Jay. When we come back, there was a sad death in the world of sports entertainment. Get to that when we come back.
As receiver, I mean, separation that he can create with his feet. I think that off the line, just the way that he's really taken ownership of it and he cares about his craft. He's just an easy guy to throw to, body language, eyes, and I feel like his catch radius is some of the best I've been around.
Buffalo Bills quarterback Josh Allen talking about a fellow Josh, Joshua Palmer. We didn't talk about him a lot, and I think partially it was because they didn't really do much in the draft. They gave this guy some pretty good money for some less than ideal stats. But, Derek, you bring it up. He was in a Greg Roman offense last year.
Correct.
And 2 years prior, he was garnering a lot of targets. He seemingly was really building with Herbert. Picks up a bit of an injury in his third year, if I remember correctly. And then last year, it's Roman. And kind of at that point, they're moving on. It's a new coaching staff. They have a very different identity with Harbaugh and with Roman. And here we are. If he has those abilities, I think that is exactly the receiver that Allen loves to throw the ball to. That is exactly who Allen loves to throw the ball to. Get open, get to a spot quickly, boom.
Yes, and furthermore into that is the fact that I don't know how much usage, because like the Brady hat, everybody eats. Like, how much is it going to be? Like, what's the statistical output that we're looking at here for Palmer?
Mm-hmm.
And I really don't know, and I'm not necessarily worried about it. Because the Bills do have a bevy of options. Moore is going to take targets. He's too good not to.
Agreed.
If Kincaid and Allen figure out the chemistry that is wonky between the two of them,
mm-hmm.
he should take some attention. James Cook will take some of these plays. Khalil Shakir is already established.
Yeah, 100 targets last year, yep.
Keon Coleman should have himself a better year. I do believe that. So what does it actually look like numbers-wise? And the answer to that is I have no idea. And that's not a bad thing.
No, because, I mean, it goes to what Brady was saying this morning when he spoke with me, Bills offensive coordinator Joe Brady. You know, you want to change things up. You don't want to stay stagnant because you want to stay at a high level. You know, the Bills don't even throw 500 passes last year. At least Josh Allen does not. But do all of a sudden, you know, the better personnel lead them to go, yeah, we'll throw the ball 540 times in a season. Then all of a sudden, yeah, the targets change drastically with who gets what and who leads the team in targets, the whole thing. I absolutely believe that was part of the issue last year. I mean, for two games, they kind of couldn't throw the ball.
If you get Palmer's career best numbers here, 72 catches, 769 yards, 3 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
Who's complaining? Consider last year, that would very cleanly be second on the team by a lot.
And it would lead the team in targets.
That leads the team in catches.
Yep.
Nope.
Only targets.
Four off. Shakir had 76.
Mm-hmm.
But it did come, for example, on 107 targets. So that would have led the team in targets.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very easily second on the team in receiving yards.
Yeah.
And I would expect that Coleman's touchdowns get the bump. You know, red zone type player, a little tougher to play against. Doesn't matter if he's covered. Try to attack the ball with your hands. Secure it. But it could very well also be Palmer.
Absolutely. 803-0550, the number to call. Let's go to the phones. Steve is up first this morning. Steve, good morning. How are we doing today?
Hey, doing pretty good. This question is kind of coming off of what we were talking about with Trey White before, and you know that some of these guys that you know we've had around for a while, you know, are going to end up on the cutting room floor when we do that final 53-man roster. And I wasn't sure if this is the year that they kind of move away from that fullback position with Reggie Gilliam to kind of give one of these younger guys a chance to make it on special teams. And I would say also even at that fullback position, you know, I don't think there's any pop from Reggie Gilliam at that spot. When I think of a fullback, I think of more of like Ricard for Baltimore, you know, especially in our run game. I think we can do better at that spot too if we're looking to have someone specific to that spot.
Yeah, Steve, thanks for the call. You know who might actually take the Reggie Gilliam role if they really wanted to use a traditional fullback? And Gilliam is kind of more of like a third-string tight end also for them. Like, he kind of does a lot. It's actually, I think, Jackson Hawes.
Yeah.
Because they're going to want that big bruiser blocker kind of type. I think that's maybe who they go to. I agree, though. Like, Gilliam's been on the roster for a while, and you do kind of sit there often. Like, what do you do?
But also,
he kind of does a lot of the dirty work for him.
Yeah, that's the thing about fullbacks. We don't talk about them if they're not being noticed. And when are you being noticed as a fullback? The same way you'd be noticed as an offensive lineman. You're missing a block.
Yeah, you did something poor.
And you don't hear much of anything from Reggie Gilliam. He is the quiet workhorse that throws his body in the way to help get you some extra yards. If you want to look at trying to create roster space, I don't know if fullback right now is the way you do it. Not with Brady's propensity to want to run the football more and create more balance. I would go ahead and listen, though, to you get one of these reliable roster players to being your kick or punt returner.
Mm-hmm.
And can Codrington do something as a corner to preserve his spot on this team? And considering the size of the room and everything with the talent around it, I don't know. Codrington as a returner has to be the best return man because that's the only way that he will really retain his spot. But the Bills are rotating in a lot of players right now. If one of those guys that is a roster fixture stands out, then you might be looking at, hey, we might be able to secure an extra roster spot somewhere because we have our return guys. And they're like Shakir, and if Curtis Samuel gets into the rotation, for example,
right.
Or Ray Davis is a primary return man
or,
now.
Coleman.
If one of those guys can stand out returning the football, you look at that's how you can create roster space. I don't know about fullback right now. I don't know about Gilliam.
I think especially, too, because Gilliam's the only one. I mean, he's the only guy they have listed at fullback.
And also, if Gilliam has clearly lost a step, that's when you have that conversation.
Right.
And that's something that the Bills will know before a lot of people will.
Oh, absolutely. It is funny. He has been on the roster for a while. Since 2020. Undrafted, picked up by him, and he's been here since. He, weirdly, is a guy that we all know and probably shouldn't. You know, it's not like he's made like these huge pop plays.
It feels
plays.
Like he's been here forever, but he's only 27.
Yeah, he's only 27. I mean, like, he was an undrafted free agent out of 2020. It's not that long ago, but it's 5 years. But he kind of just, he does the dirty work well. I do wonder what their plans are with Hawes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's a guy that, look, he was a late round pick for a reason. But the thing he does really well is block and hit people. And knowing how Brady likes to run the ball and they want to bring in that sixth offensive lineman, that extra blocker. I mean, that's where Alec Anderson obviously is coming, right? You do wonder if Hawes, you know, I look at it too, Derek. Dawson Knox, we're kind of getting to the end of that as well with Knox.
Correct. You know, there's a contract there that is going to slowly become more and more of a problem.
Yep. And Kincaid is not the hands in the dirt, I'm going to hit you tight end. He's obviously a receiver. Like, that's that's what he was drafted for. That's how he's been pitched since being here. I wonder if the Bills, again, we've talked about it, like GM's draft 3-4 years down the line. I wonder if their plan with Hawes is not necessarily to fill like even a Reggie Gilliam role, but literally just to be that second part of a tight end. And just, dude, you're here entirely just to hit people. And you're here to block while Kincaid gets open. And that's how it's going to be. And if you show any semblance of picking up that receiver aspect, then, and I wonder, they're thinking, great, maybe if Kincaid doesn't take that next step, we have our tight end of the future. If he ever develops that versatility that you kind of need at the tight end position, but he is much more of a wait and see kind of guy.
Yeah, and the other thing about this, though, is that Knox is still capable, but here's the other part about that with Hawes. Knox being out, Hawes is rotating in with the first teamers already, mostly because there's no choice. They're not playing him any fullback snaps. So, appreciate the call. I don't know if Gilliam is something to question.
Yeah, I don't know if it's Gilliam. 803-0550, though, if you want to join the conversation. A quick update from practice. It's coming from Alex Brasky. Dorian Williams sustained an apparent injury early during team drills, has not returned after exiting with a trainer. Something to monitor regarding the Bills linebacker and leading tackler from a season ago. Derek, I know Dorian Williams is absolutely one of those guys for you that you have looked to as sort of this, you know, potential Matt Milano replacement even as early as this year because, yeah, he led the Bills in tackles. He was very good for them in replacing Milano, and we are kind of getting there, like I said with Knox, with Milano of, okay, do you have to start talking about the future? That's kind of when they picked Dorian Williams as well, was that eventual replacement of both Tremaine Edmonds and Matt Milano. That's kind of how it felt with both TB and then into Dorian Williams the very next draft out of Tulane. That's how it's felt. But if he, you know, potentially picked up an apparent injury here, he would be a bit of a miss. But they do have a good linebacking room.
It's that they have some depth now. It is because of what Williams was able to do last year, jumping year one to year two. And effectively, he was forced into a starting role last year, but he did not look overwhelmed. And a lot of it was, can you read and recognize better? Because he has the athletic ability to go sideline to sideline. He's a fast-moving linebacker. He's a rangy player. Can you recognize and take the proper angles? That was the problem in the KC game. He and A.J. Klein struggled in that game.
Mightily.
I do suspect that if healthy, Dorian Williams will offer a solid piece of depth in case Matt Milano is a little bit on a snap count or they do need to spell him every now and then just to preserve his health. Williams is up to the task. And if that's the case, well, linebacker suddenly becomes something you can breathe easy about compared to last year. Compared to a couple of years ago.
Now, I will say, though, talking with Sal yesterday, and I mean, there was excitement in his voice, too, talking about Matt Milano. And that's a player, the last few years, the Bills have almost had to learn to live without. You know, we got there with Trey White as well.
Right.
Just picking up injury after injury kind of in successive years, it led the Bills to, like, okay, we've got to figure out how to be without you. And eventually led to the release of Trey White, and, you know, eventually
The trade for Rasul Douglas.
Yep. You know, they had to learn how to live without him, and it has worked, and now he's back. But Matt Milano, it's sort of the same thing. He is a player to that certain extent because they have learned to live without him. Their leading tackler was his backup. It has led me to kind of forget a little bit about him. But if they get even close to the all-pro Matt Milano from 22, plus the ascension of Terrell Bernard, that is such a strength for this team. That is such a strength of where they can go forward, especially if the D-line maybe takes a little bit of time to really get going, or just the depth is tested with Hoyt and Ogunjobi out for six games, or the cornerbacks and the young safety room takes a little bit of time to gel. That could be really, really huge for the Bills going forward, is having that talented linebacking room. And at this point now, Milano really kind of – the injuries are behind him, hopefully.
With practice going on, by the way, right now, and we see people – you know, reporting everything. I'm seeing a lot of Jackson Hawes in here, but not for the reasons that you'd want to suspect.
No.
Williams was covering Haas on the play that he pulled up.
Mm-hmm.
And then A.J. Epenesa bonked Haas after a play.
Oh, you guys can't do that. The pads aren't on yet. We can't be doing that. We cannot be doing that.
There was no scrum after it, though. Like, both players just walked away. And I'm going to guess that, like, Epenesa realized there was a mistake in his target, and they're just like, all right. Like,
tough. 803-0550, the number to call. We do also have an injury update from Jets camp.
Yes, we do, about Justin Fields.
This is from Kimberly Martin of ESPN. This is her tweet. Huge sigh of relief. Player stepped on Fields' toe. The Jets quarterback should be fine. We've all stubbed our toe. We know exactly how the feeling is. But that's why I said it with Sal, though. I know Jeremy said it too. It's cart season. It does not mean the same thing as it has years ago.
If you're dealing with a foot injury,
imagine a lineman stepping on your foot in cleats.
Yeah, it's gonna
hurt.
That would
hurt a lot.
And to be fair, you pull up anything, like if you're like, "Yeah, my toe hurts," correctly, trainer's gonna be like, "Let's go check it out." But get off the field. Come on, we're gonna go check it out.
No, why would we have you walk on it?
We're not Jacksonville. We're not animals.
Oh, your hand hurts? Yeah, do a handstand real quick.
Do you guys remember that, though? Like, the Jacksonville Jaguars, it was, I think, a primetime game.
Yep.
Trevor Lawrence hurts himself, and he has to walk to the locker room with trainers next to him. It is the most grueling thing I've ever seen.
And, yeah.
It's like, why?
Hey, your shoulder hurts here. Carry this thing real quick.
We gotta test it. We gotta make sure.
Test it on our way to the trainer room. No, of course you're not going to walk on it. Like, it's good, though, that it's like that. But tell me, anyone that's played the game, from Little League to the highest level that you ever could have, somebody steps on your foot with a cleat, doesn't feel good.
Yep.
Not a good time. Everybody hates it.
803-0550, the number to call. CJ, we'll get to you first after this quick timeout. If you hang on, you're listening to Northtown Automotive X Point Show on WGR.
Got a couple of quick heads ups for you in terms of injuries as we head into this morning's practice. These four will not practice: Dawson Knox with a hamstring, Sed Van Pran has a calf, Spencer Brown with his back, and then Laviska Shenault with a lower leg strain.
Buffalo Bills head coach Sean McDermott there with the media before we got underway from St. John Fisher. A little bit of an injury note. We did know three of these players. I think the assumption was they wouldn't practice today because they were put on some sort of injury list yesterday, those being Dawson Knox, Spencer Brown, and Cedric Van Pran Granger. Laviska Shenault, a little bit of a surprise this morning. But we will see how long all four of them are out. Knox, Derek, I think there's a good chance could be out for a little while. Brought up with Sal, it's a hamstring injury. Those can linger. I think it'd be a pretty good idea for the Bills, especially with a vet player. You've already brought in a tight end. Have him sit down for a little while, get healthy. Let's not let this baby linger. Let's figure it out. Spencer Brown, Cedric Van Pran Granger, not too sure.
It does seem that with Brown, McDermott said in particular, mm-hmm. it's a flare-up with his back, and they're just trying to get that thing to be not aggravated.
I think he even, like, kind of joked about it, too, so like it didn't seem like it was a serious thing that he was
There's no timetable on those two, though. When it comes to Knox, though, and real quick, you know, Laviska Shenault as well.
Like, lower leg strain.
So Shenault, he better get back on that field fast because there are a lot of opportunities for players to grab a roster spot, and he would pay the price for it in the return game.
Yeah, and the Bills
Daquan
already have.
Daquan Hardy is someone that you think of. Codrington, of course.
Is who I'm thinking of like, they maybe already have a guy they like a lot. And they brought in Shenault because of the change of kickoffs of like, all right, well, let's make sure we have the best guy available.
Right.
No matter what it is. And you're right. Like, if Shenault's already down, it's not great.
It's not great. But back to Knox and the tight end situation. I would imagine that if rookie Jackson Haas can hit the ground running, show a little versatility, because when he was drafted, it was what? Blocking tight end, right?
If he can show something, not his exact words, but the paraphrasing is, I like to hit people as hard as humanly possible.
So the thing is that he's drafted, everyone thinks blocking tight end. Mm-hmm. Okay. If he can show a little bit of versatility, that allows him opportunities here. Because the chance is there. The chance is there to get some extra reps. I'd imagine Kincaid's going to hoard all the one.
Mm-hmm.
But anything they need to run with, what, 12 personnel?
Yeah.
I would imagine he's probably going to have to fight Davidson for some of those, but can Davidson or Haas show versatility in fields that they are lacking?
Another camp hero, Zach Davidson.
Davidson needs to up the blocking.
Yep.
Hawes needs to show that he can catch something. Like, that's versatility that you are going to need to show in training camp right now with Dawson Knox out. If you show that versatility, you will get tight end three.
Yeah, and those are just some of the storylines to keep up with training camp getting underway at St. John Fisher. And we pose that question. You can jump on 803-0550, the number to call, or on Twitter. And let's get connected to our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Some storylines you are most interested in following as we get underway. Day one of Bills training camp, and Michael tweets in. I think he puts it perfectly, just Keon Coleman. I think that's a completely fair guy to just bring up. And you know, and to be fair, he is one of those guys I don't even need to really say anything else. It's just, for a lot of Bills fans, we talk a lot about Josh Palmer, Elijah Moore, the quick, twitchy, they get open. Keon is not that guy.
Keon is also
not his build.
A higher investment.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he's a second round pick, but let's be honest, they traded back to get him. He's still, for all intents and purposes, their first-round pick.
Comfortably traded back, knowing that several receivers were probably going to get taken in the meantime.
Mm-hmm.
And when they trade back, three of them go.
Yep.
So had to be kind of the prize of their eye all along. And again, with Palmer and with Moore, they're kind of buy-low assets. Palmer gets a three-year, but Elijah Moore's just a one-year.
Elijah's a one-year, yeah.
It's a one-off. Those aren't what I'd call high-risk expenditures.
Mm-hmm.
Coleman is still a little bit of that. He was your first pick of the draft class. May not be a first-rounder, but he basically was. You want to see more. You want to see more, and he wants to see more, is something that I would also imagine.
He had flashes. He had moments last year where you thought, okay, it's all coming together. He dealt with injuries. It didn't go well. I've loved how open he has been this offseason about how he knows he needs to get better, where he needs to get better. He has really come off, I think, this offseason. If you were worried he's a 20-something, young 20-something, he's going to maybe, you know, not take it on the chin and get a little frustrated about criticism, that has not been true at all. He has gone on podcasts during the offseason, mentioning like he knows he needs to get better. He was okay that his role was diminished as long as the team was winning. But now you got to see the work in the offseason come to fruition. I don't think many people are asking for him to be a 1,300, 1,400-yard receiver. I don't think many people are expecting him to be the next coming of like Eric Mold or anything like that. But if we can walk away after week 6 or 7 of this year and go, well, Keon Coleman's a fixture of this team. And not be like, well, it's because they used a draft asset. But like, hey, he's working. Then I think you're in a really positive spot. It's the same with Amari Cooper last year. Cooper allowed them to really spread out the offense, even if Cooper wasn't hitting, you know, as much as you'd maybe want. If Coleman can be that plus and allow the offense to spread out with Shakir, hopefully they get more of Kincaid. If Palmer, Elijah Moore, Curtis Samuel, these guys hit, they can be firing on all cylinders. This is a team last year, and I heard the guys bring it up this morning with one of their guests whose name is escaping me. You know, the mention of like, yeah, they scored a lot of points, you know, even in the AFC Championship. But it always kind of felt like Allen had to be a superhero.
That was with Mike Catalano.
Mike Catalano, thank you. Like, they kind of had to be like, Allen had to be unbelievable at times. You know, fourth down conversions, making unreal throws. Like, it never felt
long
like.
Long drives.
Yeah, and it never felt like there was that just quick, easy 20-yard completion, didn't really have to do anything, great, the offense is humming. And I think Joe Brady's been a wonderful play caller for them. I think that did come down to player personnel and who they were using and even some injuries along with, like, you know, Curtis Samuel. But that's kind of been a talking point we've had for years with the Bills, that at times it really does feel like, man, Allen is doing a lot out there. That's even going back to the Brian Daboll days. I know Nate Geary's always said it, like, not everything has to be rocket science. We can have some easy completions here. They've talked about it with Yak, and now they've kind of gotten into that area. Mm-hmm. They finally have really sort of figured that out and gotten those guys. But if you can get guys that are getting open, you know, much faster and at a higher rate, with Allen, where he has developed into a passer, I think we won't have so many games where it feels like, man, if we didn't have Josh Allen, I don't know if we score 10 points.
And I do think that Allen having as many reliable pass catchers as he has here now, none of them great, but reliable, I do think helps. I suspect that this team is going to be able to have and maintain its balanced attack. If this team wants to continue the success that it has, however, you do need a step up from Keon Coleman. You do need production from one of these two in Palmer or Moore, preferably both.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems that like the team really believes in those two players that they added as well. Can Coleman help make life even easier? Win a couple more of those jump balls? Find a way to get a little bit of extra separation, or improving his catching in traffic with a guy in his hip pocket, with someone there. Make sure that you're winning your space and commanding it.
Yeah, kind of being the guy when it's a one-on-one situation. We all know who the play is. It's Allen going to Keon.
Sort of. Can you fight off somebody who's in your hip pocket because you can't separate?
Mm-hmm.
Can you elevate that one part of your game to overcome the other? That is the hope. That is the hope, and that's something that you kind of saw happening midway through the season.
Seattle game, yeah.
The Seattle game, and you know, there were flashes all throughout, though. But then there's the plays like he drops a slant pass and it goes the other way on an interception, or you know, plays like that. Or he'll have himself set up to make a catch and he just can't reel it in. And it's like, you were brought in to catch these tough ones, and it seems like it's not consistent there. He's also a very young player.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine it's not going to suddenly turn on all the way for him this year. Because sometimes you're growing and you're learning. And you're learning to deal with people that are this fast and this skilled anyway. But he does have the ability to attack the football. And that is the part that I really hope comes out and comes through with more consistency this year. Because I'm not going to expect him to get any better with separation numbers. I don't expect it. I think that he is who he is athletically. Mm-hmm. Can you be stronger in traffic?
Yeah.
Can you make the easy catch? Because it seemed like that was kind of the problem.
Yeah, it for him it becomes, can you be great, maybe even elite, at your role on this offense?
And just a little bit more consistency.
Yep, more consistency.
Young players struggle with that.
Mm-hmm.
Coleman was what, 20, 21?
I think he was 20 for most of the year.
Yeah. I'm not going to be in the least surprised that the inconsistency was there at that point. I'm not necessarily making excuses, but mm-hmm. I'm not surprised.
Mm-hmm.
And then the injury happens. He doesn't. His body doesn't really respond well to it.
And he doesn't really respond
well to it.
Sorry, he was 21 for most of last year. He's 22 now.
Mentally, he didn't respond well to it and acknowledged that publicly.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's never been hurt like that before. So now, lessons learned. He acknowledges it.
Mm-hmm.
He thinks he needed to be a lot better than he was last year. And the first part of fixing a problem is recognizing it.
Absolutely. 803-0550, the number to call. Your camp storyline you're going to be following the most as we get underway. Mike tweets in, the player I want to follow, Derek, I know is one of your favorites, Deion Walker, a genetic freak like that can easily be a star in this league. Mike, honestly, on that point, it felt like he was going to be a star in college before he picked up some of the injuries. He is a stud. He is a massive human being. My biggest fear about him when the draft process was going on was that he seemed to be a slower player. Then we all of a sudden figured out about the back injury, and it was like, okay, well, maybe now we kind of understand where some of the issues were coming from. It's going to be real, real interesting to see how they deploy him if he hits the ground running, because he can be a real problem. He sort of is the run stuffer I think many of us were thinking about, but with elite potential. And then you add that with the TJ Sanders that they drafted in round two. The defensive line could really go from a problem and a bit of a weakness.
Problem.
Yeah, very, very quickly.
Same word, different meanings.
I bring up the Rams a lot, but the Rams really fixed their entire defensive identity with two rookies in Fisk and Verse. Verse obviously goes on to win the defensive player of the or defensive rookie of the year award. Not asking necessarily that of some of the Bills rookies. But if it can gel as a unit and we can all kind of see like, okay, TJ Sanders is coming, Max Harrison's coming, like that could be huge going forward for this team.
Say you get 3.5-4 sacks at least out of each of them. Mm-hmm. That's a good year.
I think Sanders, that's what I'm looking for. Walker, I think I'm much less on that and just like the run defense grades. How is he looking on the field when it's a run play? I think that's probably more for him. Mm-hmm. He's going to be more the defensive tackle of just the stats won't be there. It's going to be far more of just overall what does he look like.
And he was a guy that made plays, so I'd expect mm-hmm. There's going to be opportunity there for him as well. But again, if you can average out 3.5 between the two of them, that's a good year. Because either that means one guy spiked,
right,
or you got consistent production from two of them in a heavy D-tackle class that you took advantage of.
803-0550, the number to call. Jim, if you hang on the line, we'll get to you after this quick timeout. This is WGR.